Welcome, everyone, to the Lunch and Learn for Parshas Terumah 5765. Parshas Terumah is the Parsha in which Moshe and the Jewish people are commanded to construct the Mishkan, the tabernacle. I would like to share with you a words of a song that you may have heard before. It's found in the NCSY Bencher on page 103. It's a popular song. I'm told that the words do not come from any scriptures or any source in the Talmud, but that they were actually written as a poem by a rabbi, perhaps of not the distant past. And it goes like this. The song is called Bilvavi, In My Heart. Actually has a sentimental value to me because when my wife and I were married, the band was playing this as we walked down to the chuppah. Bilvavi, I'll sing it, why not? Bilvavi mishkan evne lahadar kevodo. Please sing along if you know it. Ubimishkan mizbeyachotim lekarnei hodo ulener tamid ekachli et eisho akeda ulekorbona kriblo es nafshi Es nafshi ha-yechida. That was beautiful. Yeah. You had to sing more often at class. Okay, translation.
That's for you.
In my heart, I will erect a sanctuary to glorify His honor. And in the sanctuary, I will place an altar to the glories of His splendor. For the eternal light, I will take the fire of the Akedah. And for a sacrifice, I will offer my soul, my unique soul. I'll tell you what I always thought when I read this. It's a consolation. It's a consolation. Bilvavi mishkan evne. I will build a mishkan, a tabernacle in my heart. It's a consolation. Because we all know that we're supposed to have a real Mishkan. You know, like the one they had in the desert. Or better yet, the temple in Jerusalem that was built by King Solomon. And that was destroyed by the Babylonians. And then again, the temple was rebuilt 70 years later. Under Ezra and the Jewish people that returned. So, unfortunately, we don't have that now. So, this is the next best thing. If we can't have the real Mishkan, at least we can, quote, have a Mishkan in our heart. And I think to myself, somewhat, if I can confess, somewhat cynically, that's just a consolation or a concession. It's not the real thing. It sounds beautiful, but it just doesn't do it. That's what my reaction is. I have to tell you that after reading Rav Lubavitch's words on today's Parsha, I change my mind. I don't see this concept of having a Mishkan in my heart as being second rate. In order to explain what I mean, I'm going to start from the beginning. And Rav Yerucham says certain things which are to me, they seem very, very basic and fundamental, and yet it's not something that I fully understand. So I'll share that with you, and you can decide for yourself. There's a couple of concepts that we're going to introduce, and you may say they border on mystical. The truth is, they're really, it's not totally mystical. Some of it is actually right in our Torah. But the concept is probably something which is not developed in most people's Jewish minds. The concept is hisdamus, coming from the word dome, or dimyon, which means similarity or comparison. We begin with the notion, he actually quotes from the last verse, the last passage of Pirkei Avos, which the sixth chapter, so this is the last Mishnah of the sixth chapter. It's chapter 6, Mishnah 11. And it goes something like this. Kol ma shebara HaKadosh Baruch Hu ba'olamo lo v'ra'o ela lichvodo. Shenemar kol hanikra bishvi v'lichvodi v'rasiv yitzartiv as afasisiv. All that the Holy One, blessed is He, created in His world, He created solely for His glory. As it is said, all that is called by My name, indeed, it is for Me, it is for My glory that I have created it, formed it, and made it. And it says, Hashem shall reign for all eternity. Okay? What is stated here is that everything that was created in the world, from the largest to the smallest, from the biggest mountain to the smallest blade of grass, is created for the glory of God. Now, I've always understood that in a very general sense, that since everything in the world is the handiwork of God, so when one looks at it, one sees the handiworks of the Creator and is thereby able to be impressed and be awe-inspired, and thereby feeling more awe and love for God. But there is a deeper understanding of that, and that is through this concept of histamus, of similarity, comparison, resemblance. What that means is, and this is the part that we don't really understand, at least I don't, is that everything in the world is somehow an allusion to something spiritual in the what we call the Olamos Ha'Elyonim, the upper worlds or the upper realms. One example that I've heard before that Rabbi Lubavitch quotes, it gives an idea of what we mean. There's a mitzvah to wear the fringes, and one of the strings should be the color of Techeles, which is a bluish-greenish type of color. In fact, Techeles is also central to the garments that we will read about next week, the garments that clothed the high priest. But what's the idea of the Techeles? Did anybody decide why the Techeles happens to be blue? You know, was it somebody's favorite color? You know, why blue? Why not red? So there is a famous explanation. That blue, the Techeles, this is quoted in the Talmud in Sota, Techeles, it resembles the sea. The color of the Techeles resembles the sea. The sea resembles the sky. And the sky resembles the Kisei HaKavod, the throne of glory. Now, I don't fully understand that, but What is saying to me is that even something as insignificant as the color of something, the color of a material, is somehow an illusion or brings us to associate with something in the spiritual realm. And what the sages are saying in Pirkei Avos in this statement, that everything in the world speaks of God's glory, not just in a general sense, but in a very specific way, which we don't really understand. Maybe a person who's very well-versed, there is, for example, Art Scroll just published what's called Perek Shira, the chapter of the song, which is some type of midrashic, where it takes every animal, and every animal has a song. you know, this kind of a thing, that everything in the world is a, there's an association. Have you seen it?
My daughter just gave me a copy when I visited her.
It is beautiful. I mean, the photography is breathtaking.
Yes, it's a work of art.
But the concept that nothing in the world is meaningless. Everything has meaning. And Rabbi Lubavitch is telling us everything is somehow an association to something in the upper realms, in the divine realms. So, taking that a little further, we have the Mishkan. And what Hashem says is, I'm going to instruct you with very, very specific details how to make a building with specific dimensions, specific materials, cedar wood, and the different rooms that are in there, and what should be placed in the different rooms, these vessels like the menorah, like the altar, like the ark, right? And the ark should have the cherubs on it. Everything should be made in this fashion. And this, which is a specific commandment by God, is certainly has these elements of resemblance. And certainly every nuance is going to have some association, so that when we go in there, we are going to think of God. And the people of that generation probably understood, you know, what the menorah represented. And there are commentaries such as Rabbeinu Bachayai, one of the early commentators on the Parsha. He's quoted, Rav Yerucham is quoted, not in details, but that everything, every dimension of the Mishkan and the vessels, they are all tsiurim, they are all physical drawings or physical manifestations of spiritual concepts. And they are all a dogma, a resemblance to that. And so we have this idea of God giving us a specific format and a blueprint for how to create a space which is heavy on this dimia, on this histamus, on this similarity, on this resemblance. That's concept number one. We're going to come back to that. The next concept is, and it's a corollary of the first, that when you take something physical, which is created with a specific feature of being doma, resembling something spiritual, there is now a connection made between the spiritual element and its physical counterpart. And I will just quote to you a line. Kilihios haguf doma el haruchani, being that the body, the physical body of the item, resembles the spiritual one. Lochein huchrach, therefore it is necessary, it is inevitable, ki afilu sheyeh hadavar ruchani yistabek begashmi, that even then the spiritual element will attach itself to the physical. Lerov teshukaso eleha, because of its great desire for it. In other words, something physical which resembles something spiritual draws the spiritual to it and allows it to cling. Atam, the reason is mipnei shatachtoni mishkan le'elyonim, the lower world is the dwelling place for the upper worlds. Ukimo shecheshek shechoshek hamesuvav la'alos el sivaso, just as something which was caused wants to cling to the thing which caused it. Kein choshak cheshek hasiba shiye mesovavo karov elav. So too, does the cause wish the thing that it caused to be close to it. Fancy jargon. You know what creates love between two people? If person A is enables person B to do something. It wants to be close to person B. Take parents and children. There's no greater love than a parent to a child, because the parent is the cause for that child's existence. Or if you help somebody be able to learn or be able to live, you have a tremendous desire to be attached to that person, and vice versa, because one is the cause for the other. So too, whenever there's something physical which causes there to be a resemblance to something spiritual, a bond is created. There is a cheshek, there is a yearning for the spiritual and the physical to be attached. This is the secret, so to speak, of the Mishkan. In other words, when God says, Vasuli Mikdash, make for me this Mikdash, make for me this building and these utensils in a way which I will command you, and I will make it such that they will resemble my qualities, my spiritual features up there, I will thereby be attached to that, those physical items. And therefore, my spirit will be sensed wherever those physical things are, because those spiritual things are made in my image to resemble me, and therefore they naturally attract a magnetic force to the spiritual component itself. It sounds a little bit, right, mystical, right? But how else is God's presence attached to this world? This world is a physical world. Where does it come that there should be a Shechina, a divine presence in this world? It's because this world was created by God, not just random objects, but God created objects which in their makeup resemble, are the counterparts to the spiritual parallel, and therefore it draws the spiritual to it. And therefore this world is a world which actually where the spiritual world can be mixed with the physical world, attached, with an attraction coming from both sides. Okay. That's pretty mystical, right? But here's the bomb. If this Mishkan, right, can be built out of wood and metal and stone, and can be created to resemble in some way, shape, or form divine counterparts, is there anything else in the world that could be said to have a greater resemblance to God than these pieces of wood and stone? Any ideas? The human being. What is man called? He was created Tzelem Elokim. He was created in the image of God. And if a color blue, if a blue string can resemble something spiritual, and a configuration of cedar beams can resemble something spiritual, how much more so the human being, which was imbued with a soul and the capacity to, and a mind and a heart and a capacity to act and to express gestures of kindness, of mercy. Isn't that even more resembling God? Is there anything that resembles God more? Surely not. In fact, there is a mitzvah in the Torah. There's a mitzvah for people to halach to bedrachav, to walk in the ways of God. I don't have the chapter and verse. It's in Devarim and Deuteronomy. But it says we are commanded to walk in the ways of God, the ways that we know God walks. And those are summarized by the sages as the 13 attributes of mercy. We say them, in the prayers on Slichos, on the high holidays. Hashem, Hashem, Kael, Rachum, V'chanun, mercy, compassion, slow to anger, forgiving, bearing the sin, etc. So there's a mitzvah in the Torah just to act that way too. Ma'ata rachum, just like you are merciful. Mahu rachum, just as he is merciful. Af ata tehe rachum, you should also be merciful. Just as he is compassionate, you should also be compassionate. Etc., etc. In fact, some of the commentaries say that the whole correspondence, the parallel of the Mishkan, is to the human being. There is the Rambam, in fact, that says that the reason why there are cherubs on the Aron, on the Ark, is because cherubs represent the human being, and the wings, I guess it says, represent the two lungs, and the Ark represents the heart. So if we have it backwards, the Mishkan is only second best to the human being. What would the Parsha be saying to us then? If you make me a mikdash, if you make a physical house that resembles me, I will attach myself to it. There will be this attraction, this cheshek, this longing and yearning and clinging to it because it parallels me. What is it saying about us? If you make yourselves to resemble me, if you embody my attributes, whoa, I will cling to you. Let's read that again. Bilvavi mishkan evne lehadar kevodo. In my heart, I will build a mishkan. What does that mean? It's not a consolation prize. The human being is the closest thing to embody and resemble God's qualities than anything else. The mishkan is the consolation prize. What happened? In fact, the Sepharno well-known commentary says that he said that the Torah is written out of order here. That really, God gave us the commandments, and while Moshe was on Mount Sinai, the Jewish people became impatient, and they built the golden calf. And we can understand now what they were thinking. They were probably doing it because they figured that the golden calf could have certain resemblances to God, and therefore they would have an attachment to God through the calf. But the problem was that they were not commanded to do that, and therefore was considered a sin. And Moshe came down, the tablets were broken. Then God says, I see that the people, it wasn't enough just to have that attachment to themselves in their hearts. They seem to need some type of an intermediary. So I guess I will command them to build a Mishkan. The Mishkan was a concession. Other than that, we had in the Parsha at the end of Yisro, after the Torah was given, there's a verse, this is quoted by the Sepharno, that says, "Bechol hamakom asher azkiras shemi avo elecha ve'rachticha, wherever I permit my name to be mentioned, I shall come to you and bless you." What that means is, I shall come to you and bless you, God says. That means anywhere where a Jewish person calls God's name, I'll be there. You don't need a Mishkan, because you create the attachment of the Shekhinah, the Divine Presence, into this physical world by calling my name. If you resemble God, if you want to embody the midos of Hashem, the qualities of Hashem, I'll come and I'll attach myself to you as well. You don't need a Mishkan. It was only when the Jewish people showed a weakness that they needed some type of physical form to look at it to inspire them to resemble God, that God instructed them to build the Mishkan. But the real place, the real potential for connecting the physical to the spiritual is right inside of us. What we learn from this is that our avoda, we're going through life, we're on a journey, we are here to recognize that the world is a testing ground, that God has created a world where there is opportunity to attach ourselves to Him and also the opportunity to distance ourselves from Him. These are the mitzvos and these are, God forbid, the sins. And that ultimately, in the final day, God will reveal Himself so much that all evil will just vanish because the whole world will be filled with His glory. And that we cause that revelation to occur by serving Him. By devoting our lives to connecting with God, we are really causing God's Shekhinah to attach itself more and more. And we understand that we do this through a very, very powerful source, as we have spoken about before, is through the study and the observance of the mitzvos and the Torah, and particularly this idea of being lehizdamos, to be like God, and to embody His traits and His attributes. This is one of the mitzvos, but it's a very, very all-encompassing mitzvah. And it almost like goes straight to the source. He says this is the meaning of the verse, which we have in Leviticus, a famous verse as well, the beginning of chapter 19. Kedoshim tihiyu, you shall be kedoshim, you shall be holy, you shall be elevated. Why? Ki kadosh ani Hashem. Because I, God, am kadosh. And that's really our job. Our job is to be like God. Not in terms of power, but in terms of midos. Mahu rachum afatate rachum. Just as He is merciful, you be merciful. And that's how we create the Shekhinah. So the Mishkan is really, it turns everything around. Rather than focusing on the Mishkan, you know, we don't have a Mishkan. Well, God is saying to us, gentlemen, I gave you, I didn't tell you to first have a Mishkan. You wanted the Mishkan, I gave it to you. And then, you know, you got bored with it, or it wasn't inspiring you. So there's no other choice. Now you've got to make the Mishkan within yourselves. That's really what it's all about anyways. The wood and stone aren't going to help you. They didn't help you. You have to make it within yourself. We're going back to the ideal, because the concession didn't help. That's the main idea. There's another idea, but maybe we should just savor this. We could talk about that another time. In fact, in this particular parsha, it says that the title Teruma Tetzave, and I don't think there's, and it's basically all about teruma. So I'm not sure what if you Rabbi Rucham wrote anything on specifically up Tetzave. So maybe for next week we'll continue from here. But I think the point has been made that from the Mishkan we learn the power that is invested within Adam, within the human being himself. A human being has the greatest opportunity, possibility of resembling God. We are created in His image, B'Tzelem Elokim, which means that we can embody the very same traits within our character, and it is this idea of resembling that creates the bond between the physical and the spiritual. That's what really brings holiness and divine presence into the world, the way that we form ourselves and resemble Him. It was actually one of the branches of the menorah that. It was, I think, miraculous that it didn't burn out like the other ones. Every day they would come back and clean out the cups that had burnt out and put in new oil and new wicks, and the westernmost was still lit. Then the custom, even though we didn't have it anymore, the real menorah, but there was a custom to have an eternal light.
Maybe yes. That's the point. I think we have to
go. Yeah, to go along with this, I was told that the reason why is the parsha named Truma. Ordinarily, it would be named after a person, or in this case, you could say it would be called Mishkan. You know.
Yeah.
It's because of Truma. It's man's contribution. It was and the Chiddush is not even that God was revealed. He had already been revealed. Not that that's not great.
Uh-huh.
But the Chiddush is the fact that for the first time,
the donations.
Yeah, the donations are what
coming from man.
And that's why they call it Truma.
As opposed to God's Shekhinah,
right?
It was called man's Truma. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Very, very nice.
Yeah.
Very, very nice.
Beautiful. That's really
very good insight.
What's my insight?
Yeah,
the Rebbe's insight.
Which Rebbe? Which Rebbe?
The Rebbe.
Mm-hmm.
Where did that fit the temple and the final temple?
That was great.
So this is a famous issue. See, I mentioned the Sefarno. The Sefarno says that the order of the Parshios are not chronological. Nachmanides takes the other approach, and he says that we sometimes the Torah is not chronological, but we don't look for that explanation if we don't absolutely have to. It seems as though the Mishkan was planned all along, and it was given, the Ramban says it was given by God to the Jewish people immediately after Matan Torah, after the giving of the Torah, and he says it's a way of continuing the event of Ma'amad Har Sinai, standing at the mountain, which was a supernatural, glitzy event, that we would have the Mishkan would be a little bit more subdued, but would basically be a continuation of Ma'amad Har Sinai. And he finds similarities between the Mishkan, the elements in the Mishkan, and the giving of the Torah, such as the fire and the smoke and all that. So, okay, so here we have two opposing views.
Mm-hmm.
The Sefarno is saying that the Mishkan is a concession to our weakness. Mm-hmm. It was only became necessary after the Egel HaZahav. The Ramban is saying that it's an ideal. So how do we reconcile these two? Well, you could say we don't. It's a machlokas. It's a dispute. But I once saw in a sefer called Sabbath Shiurim by Rabbi Moshe Miller of Gateshead, England, who used to give beautiful talks on the Parshios. And he quotes a Hasidic source. It was one of the Hasidic masters that suggests a middle ground which would satisfy both the Sefarno and the Ramban, synthesize. And he basically talks about two different levels of a Mishkan. That one level of the Mishkan is concession, but then there's a higher level of the Mishkan, which is actually an outgrowth of the people's inner spiritual level.
Mm-hmm,
and I just jumped into my mind. I know the Talmud says, asks a question, how come in Tehillim, how come King David has a lot of different Tehillim, and sometimes there started Mizmor LeDavid, a song for David. And sometimes it says LeDavid Mizmor, for David a song. The Talmud asks, how come one way this way, one way that way? So he says that King David had Ruach HaKodesh. He had the divine spirit. Not the level of prophecy, but divine
inspiration.
So so sometimes, but David HaMelech, also went through many, many difficult trials and tribulations. So sometimes he wrote his psalms because he was so filled with divine Ruach HaKodesh that he was just inspired to write the song. And sometimes he was feeling down and he needed to elevate himself back up to the level of Ruach HaKodesh, and so he used his songs, the music of his songs, in order to raise him up. And so in the first case, that was LeDavid Mizmor. He was David. He was at his height, his pinnacle. And therefore, out of that came the Mizmor. And sometimes he used the Mizmor to become David. So I'm just thinking of that analogy. The Jewish people, so, you know, the Hasidic master wants to make peace between all the sages here. The Sepharno says that they were on the lower level. They needed the Mishkan in order to focus them so that they could rise to their potential. So that was like maybe that was a lower level Mishkan. But there is and through that the Jewish people were able to elevate themselves, you know, mm-hmm. to resemble God. But then there's a higher level where they are on a high level there, and therefore they create the reality of a heaven on earth. They actually, out of their spirits, out of their hearts, comes this Mishkan. And he says that's the Ramban's model of the Mishkan. You know, that it is possible for us to create such a divine sense on earth that we must have this place, this heaven on earth, this earthly temple. That's how he reconciles the two. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Shekoach. Yeah.
Yesterday I learned something from Rabbi Avi about the parsha that was pretty amazing. With he asked the question, when do we become free? When do we become free? And people were saying, you know, we could truly become free when we enter Eretz Yisrael. And, you know, where he was expressing the point that coming to Har Sinai was the time of full redemption, because we came full cycle, mm-hmm. like back to our votes and the relationship with Hashem.
Mm-hmm.
But he said along the same lines, the whole purpose of there being a Har Sinai and being a Mishkan was for us to get a focus on the most important thing in the world, is to recognize it's in the middle of all our people.
Yeah.
That's
the
model for us to have, like you're saying, the two comparisons. Mishkan is supposed to be inside us.
Mm-hmm.
Hashem shows us that through we're one people, we're an Am. So as a whole nation, we focus on the oneness of God and our unity, and yet individually we also have that. So it's a big and a small
mm-hmm.
model.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a big and a small mm-hmm. model of, like you said, with the lungs mm-hmm. and the heart.
Mm.
It all fits.
Very nice.
It's like the same. It's really the same thing, just a big and a small scale.
Pilvavi Mishkan Evna. So actually, what you're saying is very good. You're saying that maybe the Mishkan is for the people, but that really even in for that time, the individuals have to have the Mishkan in their heart. You know, it also, I really should have mentioned this, everybody notices that the verse, Vasuli Mikdash Veshachanti Besocham, they shall make a sanctuary for me so that I may dwell among them. Really, you would have thought that it would say, make a sanctuary for me so that I may dwell in it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the antecedent.
Amongst them, it's individually.
What he's saying is that if you dedicate yourself to this idea of having a Mishkan, having our people center around the God, so then God's dwelling will be among the people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the pasuk.
Yeah.
It's a powerful pasuk.
Yeah.
Another thing about the Mishkan was even different than the temple itself, was the fact that God shows that God could reach the Jewish people in the most far-off places. And that's an important element, too, you know, because the temple, that's in a very prominent place.
Mm.
Like going to shul. You know,
right.
You're out in the woods someplace. Uh-huh. You know, this shows that mm-hmm. you can be, God will reach us even in our deepest or our mm-hmm. most remote
mm-hmm.
Situation.
In the middle of a thorn.
Which makes sense, because if he's attaching himself to the people, so wherever the people are,
right.
You know.
Exactly.
Yes, I'm sorry. I okay. I forgot.
This part that describes how God commanded the Israelites to make the Mishkan, which I presume they went ahead and did make it during that era.
Yeah.
Was there only one Mishkan throughout
this Mishkan accompanied them into Israel, and there was a total of 360 or 70 plus years until the temple was built by David. by Solomon in Jerusalem. Now, the Mishkan had kind of a rocky road. We're studying about that in our class on prophets, where the even the Ark was captured by the Philistines, and the Mishkan was kind of exiled from place to place, and the Ark was exiled. So there was a point at which the you know the Mishkan, I don't know if it was used. It was in Shiloh. Mm-hmm. In Shiloh, they were there for a long time, and they built something more temporary. Excuse me, I meant to say more permanent, but not as permanent as the temple in Jerusalem.
But David brought it back to Yerushalayim. He brought it back.
The Ark.
The Ark.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ir
David, yeah.
Was it in Ethiopia at any
time? What is it in Ethiopia? I wouldn't have thought. I wouldn't think so.
There was a television show recently,
mm-hmm.
which portrayed it was winding up at a particular remote locale. Actually, not on an island, in a lake.
Wow.
They have pictures. They have pictures there. Of I saw a program similar, maybe that one or similar to it, that in Ethiopia, and they have people that, you know, they actually have copies of it.
Yeah, but I'm not ready to believe it.
But you know what? I was thinking about that. If I say really over, in the time of Shlomo HaMelech, he had relationships with all the kingdoms of the world. They came to see his wisdom, and they came and they learned and they wondered and took things back. So I wonder how the archaeologists, when they found this. If it's because they saw it and they came back and did it, or was it because they it actually had landed there?
Oh, you mean they may have just
Kush, all the way to Kush.
Learned enough to make a copy.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It was Sheba. Also taken into battle.
Not the Mishkan, but the Ark. Maybe they took the Ark mm-hmm. in some of the battles in the Book of Samuel. Yeah.
That my famous
is
that they actually had two.
Yeah, that's
one
right.
One that went to war,
that's right.
The
yes, we learned about that.
And at one time, I don't know where the war one was, but they sent the Mishkan one out, and that's the one that got captured. And that was a no-no.
It's interesting. The king is supposed to have two Torahs, one that he keeps at home and one that he takes with him wherever he goes.
It's a backup.
Yeah.
Backs it up.
Backs it up and see this. Good Shabbos.
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 Thank you for